Hughes Kay, I'm director of the Congress Economic Research Unit, which is affiliated to the Irish Congress of Trade Unions and is undertaking independent research. When Colin Harman asked me to speak at this conference about 2 weeks ago, I didn't realise that I'd be giving the keynote address, but in any case, perhaps it would be useful to front load the pain by getting my bothersome piece out of the way, if I could put it that way. I'd just like to begin by quoting someone who's quite familiar in this country, István, oh, I don't know how to pronounce this actually, Szekely, that's going to get that right, speaking at the end of a news conference following the Troika visit and evaluation under the bailout program. Mr. Szekely said, and I'm quoting directly, "I would encourage everyone to bring up evidence because this discussion should be evidence-based. Let me reiterate our strong commitment to listen to social partners, to NGOs, and to everyone in this society. And if issues are raised and evidence is provided and there is a constructive way of working together, we will work together with everyone to find solutions to difficult problems in relation to issues such as unemployment and vulnerable." And that exactly is what the Congress Economic Research Unit is mandated to do. Some of the key points I'd like to briefly touch on this morning, and there is a longer paper that I've prepared for this event, which if anyone is interested, are available here after the session. First, I'd like to talk about unemployment, and then the domestic economy. I'd like to pose the question, are we really being European, genuinely? And then to conclude with consideration of realistic economic policy options at this time. In relation to unemployment, the overall rate of unemployment in autumn of last year across the European Union was approximately 10% of the labour force. And the seasonally adjusted rate for Ireland in November, 14.6%. You can see there that a number of countries have a much higher rate of unemployment, but ours is certainly well above the European average. Something that I think characterises economic debate currently is a relative lack of attention to youth unemployment. Interesting, because this was a really big issue in the 1980s, and a lot of policy responses and a lot of analysis. There's been relatively less attention, it seems to me, given to this topic. And if we look at the rates of unemployment for young people under the age of 25, again, in autumn of last year, the rate for Ireland, for the Republic of Ireland, is now just under 30%. It'll obviously go over 30%, I'm sure, in subsequent quarters. I'd suggest that there are perhaps three bands of European countries here. Countries that have very high rates of youth unemployment that are really in danger of social breakdown. And you can see which countries are at the very top in the red band there. And there are other countries in the middle. And this could be an early warning indicator, which is relevant not only to social cohesion, but to long-term fiscal sustainability, because if we don't create a long-term sustainable pattern of employment, we do risk creating enormous problems in terms of fiscal sustainability, let alone economic sustainability. In relation to the domestic economy, it's interesting to look at the major components of growth in GDP over a long period of time. If we stretch back to the early 1990s and look forward from there, the percentage point growth in GDP accounted for by domestic demand has always been a major component of GDP growth. In fact, by far the biggest component. External demand, measured as exports less imports, net export demand, was certainly a component of the rapid economic recovery in the 1990s, but was less a factor in terms of the overall percentage increase in GDP. You can see that in the recent years, 2008-2009, there was a very sharp drop in domestic demand, 25% in real terms, from the peak quarter in 2007 up to the current period. And the projections are for a continuing contraction in domestic demand this year, at best, optimistically, a flatlining of domestic demand next year in 2013, according to the medium-term fiscal statement. So we're putting our eggs very much into the net export basket. The idea that we can hopefully grow our way out of this, initially at least, through net export demand. But the indications are not good right now, particularly in the Eurozone area, where the IMF is forecasting a contraction in demand. So to the right of this chart, from 2013 onwards, almost the entire, or the vast bulk of the adjustment of the recovery is projected in terms of external demand increase. That, I suggest, is a big gamble because the domestic economy is still contracting with huge implications as well for public finances. Just to turn to the question of where we stand in relation to European norms and averages when it comes to government expenditure and revenue, and I'd like to contest the view that is frequently expressed that in some way public expenditure was out of control. It was increasing at an alarming rate throughout the last decade, throughout the 2000s, and that in fact was really a major part of our economic problem in 2008 onwards. In fact, the overall level of general government expenditure and general government revenue, which includes taxes but also non-tax revenues, was very stable as a proportion of GDP in and around 35% from, let's say, 1998 up to 2007. And as we know, the level of general government debt, gross debt, was very low by European standards at around 25%. So what has happened since 2008 is that we've had a recession. Unemployment has escalated, notwithstanding the cuts in public expenditure in various programs from autumn of 2008 onwards. Public expenditure has actually grown as a proportion of GDP and very sharply in the immediate 2 years following the onset of recession. In this particular graph, I've included the effect of the bank recapitalization in 2010, the results of which are, of course, the promissory notes, and that's accounted for by Eurostat. This is all Eurostat data in terms of the public expenditure and the deficit in that particular year. So perhaps it might be more meaningful to take that bit out and to concentrate on the underlying trends in expenditure and revenue. So you see a yawning gap, a growing public sector deficit in 2008-2009, very significant attempts to bring down public expenditure, both as a proportion of GDP as well as in absolute terms. And then out towards 2015, under the four-year plan, which was published in autumn 2010 and was, in terms of the broad macroeconomic parameters, was transposed into the Memorandum of Understanding with the Troika at the end of 2010, the projection of expenditure, public expenditure, will fall as a proportion of GDP from its current level of approximately 45% to approximately 38% by the year 2015. My point is that the projection for total revenue is held constant at around 35%, notwithstanding the increases, the very substantial increases, both in tax rates, tax incidence of tax rates, and the broadening of the tax band. So let me put it this way, the entire burden of the adjustment, if you measure it as a proportion of GDP, is on public expenditure. And that is a domestic political choice, not an externally imposed one. It's a choice that was made quite some time ago and has been carried over into the current program of government. I'm conscious that some here may question the use of GDP instead of GNP. Well, that's another day's discussion, but very briefly, GDP includes all of taxable income, including the repatriated profits of multinational companies, which are taxable, at least normally anyway. And moreover, GDP is the definitive measure or criterion in the excessive deficit procedure and the Maastricht criteria and the Stability and Growth Pact. So GDP really is the measure that should be used in international European comparisons, and in any case is one of the criteria used by the government in assessing public sector deficit and debt. Just to stay for a moment with the issue of tax, again, there's a commonly held view that that we're a high tax country by now, all these tax increases, and marginal tax rates are coming up to 55% and more. In fact, the overall level of government revenue as a percentage of GDP is very low in Ireland. In fact, we're down with what I call the IA states. These are states, countries that whose names finish in IA, so with Slovakia, Lithuania, Romania, Bulgaria, Latvia, and Estonia is a bit above the rest. We're down there at a very low rate of overall tax revenue as a proportion of GDP. And if you make the assumption that other countries hold their own in this comparison, and Ireland adjusts in the way that is foreseen in the coming 4 years, we would be actually at the bottom of the league. I don't know if everyone can see that. I see someone has to stand at the top row. Take my word, we're at the bottom, actually, behind Bulgaria. But this, of course, could be misleading because other countries will not stand still. They'll probably make adjustments as well. And the IMF World Economic Observer database provides projections out to the year 2016 for some countries, not all countries, relevant to the EU comparison. So I'm afraid the Slovak Republic beats us to it, actually. They have a lower tax rate in 2016. These projections were made in September 2011, are probably somewhat out of date. So that's our choice. And looking to the future, the choice that we've made is to move away from European norms and averages. European norm in terms of public expenditure and revenue is, well, in terms of expenditure, is somewhere around 50% for EU 27. The revenue is obviously somewhat lower at 45%. So we're moving away from that central average European norm towards the lower bound of tax of revenue collection and public expenditure. That's our choice. It's not anyone else's choice, and we're not being made to do this. We certainly are being made to reduce the deficit by 2015, and that's a question whether we can actually manage to do that. But let's assume that we do, then there are different ways of doing it. And this is one way that we have chosen to go. And that does have major social, labour market and political implications. I'm not sure if anyone has seen the film, or what you think of the film, but anyway, if I can get this to work.
Can I confess a thought, you know, genuinely solve the unemployment problem? Do you think that I would not press that button this instant? Does anyone imagine that there is the smallest political gain in lifting this level of unemployment procedure? Or that there is some obscure economic position which demands this level of unemployment as public is their ritual? Mr. Chairman, this government is pursuing the only policy which gives any hope of bringing our people back to real and lasting employment.
Okay. A famous person, Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, thank you. Many believe that she changed the face of Britain forever. Some may disagree with that, but the legacy of that adjustment that took place in the early 1980s was indeed traumatic for British society. One of the implications of which, of course, is that inequality grew, child poverty, lone parent poverty, and overall inequality in incomes grew quite sharply in the United Kingdom as it did in the United States. And again, that was driven by particular factors, political, economic factors at that time. Not sure if you can see this chart, and I'm going to try and bring this to an end because Donald wants us to skip the time this morning, so I did promise 20 minutes. We were there before in terms of unemployment rates. However, the past is not always a very good guide to the future. And one of the issues about unemployment in the 1980s, both in the UK and here in Ireland, the graph, the blue graph on the top there relates to Ireland, to the Republic of Ireland. You can see there that unemployment, this is the overall unemployment rate, remained very high until the early to mid-1990s. A lot of people forget that, actually, that our unemployment rate did not
dropped below double-digit figures until July 1997. And the peak was reached in the UK in 1986, here in 1985, and then there was a surge again in unemployment towards 1992, 1993. So the point here is that it's going to be extremely difficult to get the unemployment rate down to levels below 10% in this country. You can see there the blue line is still pointing upwards, and there is no indication that unemployment, either in absolute terms or in, as a proportion of the labour force, is going to drop very significantly. Again, that has major implications for public finance, because every time a cut takes place in public expenditure, every time that revenue is increased, other things equal, it will impact on domestic demand and directly on jobs. And we're all agreed on this. We may differ on the extent of that impact, but it is clear from the modelling done, for example, by our colleagues in the Economic and Social Research Institute, that different policy interventions have different impacts on the public sector deficit, on the domestic economy, on GDP and unemployment. So it's extremely difficult to tackle this issue of unemployment as long as we are on this austerity pathway. I'd just like to conclude at that point and to say that our remit is to investigate, and I know this session is also about the capacity building in relation to economic research. We hope over time to improve the availability of alternative economic analysis and possible alternative fiscal pathways that would involve a way of spreading the austerity adjustment over a longer period, allowing the domestic economy more time to recover, and increasing capital investment in much needed projects of an environmental nature, but also of a direct impact on the domestic economy. All of this needs to be seriously considered, because if Plan A isn't working, and there is no evidence that it is working, then we certainly do need to think about and look at a Plan B urgently. Thank you.